the great sea has set me in motion, set me adrift, moving like a weed in the river. The sky and the strong wind have moved the spirit inside me till I'm carried away and trembling with joy. At this point in our service, we take a few moments to center ourselves. If you would like, please take this opportunity to light a candle, to give thanks, to hold a memory, to strengthen your resolve, or simply to bring a little more light into this world. If you will, please join me in an attitude of prayer. All too often, our prayers are words sent up and out like birds escaping or desperate howlings at some distant moon. But at calmer times, our prayers can stay nearby and tend to the here and now. When each breath becomes a prayer, the entire action of our living is elevated above a daily shuffle to become an ecstatic now. Let us breathe together. With your first breath, feel your belly moving. With your next breath, feel your skin and your clothes resting lightly upon your body. With the next breath, be aware of the people immediately around you. With your next breath, try to feel all of the people in this room. Take a couple of breaths to reach your awareness to everyone sitting here. And when you are finally holding everyone in your mindful breath, grant them a blessing of peace. Now, as you breathe in and out, bring yourself back to your own seat, your own skin, your own belly, and grant yourself a blessing of peace in the form of one deep, full breath. I'm pretty sure this isn't what my mother had dreamed for me. Raising me up, I don't think she'd imagine I'd take this path. If I was destined to be a teacher, she probably saw me standing in front of orderly desks in a cool, quiet classroom, not in a hot room where giant, noisy fans are unable to move the air fast enough and the sweat trickles down our backs and soaks our clothing. We're on padded floors, and some of us are trying to stop panting, or at least be less obvious about it. The class is alert and ready to spring back into motion at my next command. If I was destined to be an artist, I'm sure Mama saw me using a typewriter or inky brushes to create images and words that would burn or soothe. Instead, it is my body that I throw into the creative process. My hands and feet become the brushes, and I paint wildly into thin air, leaving nothing behind. In my mind, I have seen mountains and trees and waterfalls, and I have silently recited poems and prayers, celebrating the glory of all creation. I am a martial artist. It doesn't pay any better than the rest of the arts. So I earn my money elsewhere. But in the evenings, I study and teach Tukang Musul, a Korean martial art. I was called to it, and I am very grateful that Mama does delight in seeing the teacher and the artist that I have become. Now, most people have an idea about the martial arts, and it's generally not what you'd wish for your daughter. If you think about the typical martial artist, you're likely to conjure up a beefy, angry man bent on causing pain. And I've met that man. But for the most part, most martial artists are pretty nice folks. Are we dangerous? Well, probably a bit. However, even though I've practiced over and over all sorts of ways to kick and punch and throw and flat tick someone out, I'm really not much more dangerous than a calligrapher. Please don't sneak up on me, though. Something will happen, and it will probably mean we both have to go change clothes afterwards. However, don't sneak up on calligraphers either, or any other artist. They know perfectly well how to turn their tools into weapons in an instant. Like other artists, I'm selfish, and my art is awfully inconvenient for my family. When I grab my bag and my weapons and I start out the door, "You're going back there again? Mommy, please don't go." All of us at the school hear this from our families. We all nod in hot, weary recognition from one another that we know, not too secretly, we'd all rather be training than anything else. Yes, it takes me away from my family, doesn't pay any bills. I miss the Wednesday night suppers here, and it wrings out my body so that often I'm cringing into bed at night where I know the pain will catch up with me. But I'll be back at the school in a day or two, as steady as the seasons. I've been showing up for 23 years now, and I'm not about to stop. What commitment! What discipline! Nah. I keep showing up because I don't want to miss anything. Now, so far, this must sound like an obsession, but let's consider it as a spiritual practice. The two are easily confused. How did I start down this path, and is it really a spiritual one? I was raised as a Unitarian Universalist, and I have known it as my birthright and duty to engage in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. When I was a teenager, we attended a large, self-satisfied congregation with a resonant minister whose wonderful words flowed out every Sunday morning. Words, quotations, readings, and solid, serious hymns, not like this fluff we have nowadays. I knew that my search for truth and meaning should start with books, and I should read the great teachers from the great religions. But how come I could never really make any of it resonate? The most profound words were still hollow for me. Reading the words wasn't enough. Now for some history. Tai Chi came to the U.S. in the 1960s, and it spread rapidly during the 1970s. My first real experience was an informal class Mom signed us up for. In it, we studied good basic Chinese Yang-style Tai Chi Chuan. It was fun. Did we remember it and practice it diligently every day? No. But I liked it. It was kind of cool, kind of hip. I took more classes, and I kept liking it. It was very cool, very hip. As I prepared to leave for college, my teacher explained I would need to find another teacher, but be sure to find one who would teach me old-timey Tai Chi, not some mushy, powerless, watered-down, dancey Tai Chi. What he meant was that I needed to find a teacher who knew the real power of Tai Chi and who would admit that it was indeed about fighting and defense. With that advice, I went out into the world and I kept my eyes out for such a teacher, and I passed over several who didn't measure up. After a couple years, I arrived at a class taught by Wanik Yi. He was a young man raised in a Korean monastery, and he'd only been in the U.S. a short time. When he demonstrated one of his forms, it electrified me. There was nothing mushy or watered down there. Would he be my teacher? I didn't know. All I wanted was to learn how to do that. And from that point on, Korean Ipsan became the one sustained passion in my life. Now, here's a bit more side history and some definitions. Most Tai Chi taught here in the U.S. comes from China. Different styles have developed over time, and they've been handed down through family lines, so they have family names, Yang, Chen, and Wu. The style that I study is Korean, Ipsan, and it's part of a body of knowledge that's taught at the Daeyongsa Temple in Korea, where Wanik Yi was raised. Ipsan translates into moving meditation. Sun is the Korean word that in Japanese is zen, a meditative practice. We also have jazun, which is walking meditation, and wasun, which is laying down meditation, and juasun, which is sitting meditation, like zazen in the Japanese tradition. And these meditative practices were part of the rigorous martial arts and philosophy taught by the monks at the monastery. It is typical that a serious martial arts student will find one teacher and stay with that teacher for years, if not their entire life. A student picks her teacher very seriously and carefully, but a teacher picks his students even more carefully. For better, and sometimes worse, I picked and was picked by Master Yi. Now, our English term master is a little thin here. For the most part, it means that someone has mastered their craft or their art. In traditional martial arts, master actually translates into something richer, into father-teacher, because the master will be like a teaching father overseeing his students' lives. Master Yi has had to bail students out of jail, provide marital counsel, lend money, make hospital visits, attend funerals, sometimes deliver a dope slap upside the head or kick the feet out from somebody who needs one more lesson in humility. Being a master is more of a responsibility than an honorific. My lessons under Master Yi were an immediate blend of philosophy, self-defense, and sweat-drenched exercise. The images and the forms were taken from nature. The actions were direct enactments of conflict and the balance of power. No sermon had ever made so real or so immediate the struggles of the body and the heart. I woke up, and I found that I was engaged in a free and responsible search for truth and meaning while learning to kick and punch and block and guard and attack. Discussions of good and evil were no longer arm's-length abstractions. They were in my face, or hopefully whizzing right past it as I ducked at just the right moment. I found that when it comes to religion, I'm more of an experiential learner. I have to throw my physical body into the process to fully understand certain concepts. I have to breathe to know certain truths. What we practice are forms, fixed series of movements based on animal, philosophy, and nature. The movements can be offensive or defensive, depending on your perspective or which side of the fist you're standing on. Once a form is learned, it is repeated exactly the same, over and over. Through repetition comes an understanding at a deep level, much as chanting or praying over rosary beads or any mindful practice can focus one's attention. Different forms tell different stories. Some are histories. Some are clear narratives with progression. And some are more abstract meditations on the natural world. One form that I especially enjoy is called Five Elements. And in it, we recreate the universe anew. And we introduce the five elements of Asian cosmology: water, wood, metal, wind, and fire. Then we gather energy from the sun and dig energy up from the earth. And like two parents forming a child, these energies combine to form human life. Once this energy emerges, we introduce the energies of yin and yang, the dancing opposites of masculine and feminine. Finally, once all of these elements and energies are set spinning on their paths and all are in balance, we are reminded of our school's philosophy that when mind, body, and spirit are connected, nothing is impossible. This form is a powerful opportunity to meditate on the forces of nature and seeking balance. In Oriental medicine, health is achieved by balancing the five elements as well as the yin and yang. However, I like this form because it reminds me of the process theology developed by our longtime church member and philosopher Charles Hartshorn. Now, honestly, his groundbreaking work is way more complicated than I can ever fully comprehend, but what I've taken from it is the concept that humans are co-creators in the experience and process of an evolving universe. That we are not simply riders on a bus created by some god or wallflowers at some cosmic dance. Instead, the human energies affect both the heavens and the earth, and we are partly responsible for creating this reality moment by moment. So when I start that form and I put my belly at the center of the universe, I play God for just a few minutes. And afterwards, I go forth, better able to appreciate the beauty of this world. Now, what makes this a truly spiritual practice and not just some self-indulgence or an obscure art form? There are several things. First, to really get anything out of Ipsun, I have to check my ego at the door and be humble enough to recognize I know so little and I have a lot to learn. And now, as part of becoming a master myself, I have found that it is my duty to uphold the ideal of a peaceful warrior. This ideal spreads into all parts of my life, at work, at home, behind the wheel of my car, at the checkout line at the grocery store, where I must live out and live up to this philosophy of consideration and patience and forgiveness. Finally, to be an effective teacher, I must take my students more seriously than they take themselves, and I must see the Buddha in each of them. That is the demanding practice. For while my body might bruise and ache, that is what demands the most of my spirit. Now to close, let us share one of my other favorite forms with you. This one is purely philosophical. We don't explain it in terms of self-defense or offense. It is the first form I learned on my journey with Master Yi, and it's one that I still return to. In it, I've learned about love and sacrifice, honor and evil and weakness, and from all just learning how to move my arms and step just so. I struggled to even find words for all of what I've learned from this form. But what I do know is that it is truth, and it has given my life meaning.